For me personally, I wish that there was a little bit more things in like the environment that like, oh, it's ending in the, top right where Talitch's islands were ending. Like maybe if I had the glider boots, like
I'm
maybe
with
it's
you,
better
man.
there. Yeah, like
That's why. That's why we. That's.
Oh,
he's gone.
I'm with you, man. DCs.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Kaiju Power. I'm your host Weedle, joined alongside Lemur and Fernie. How you two doing?
Fernie.
Doing well, thanks, Lemur. How about you?
I'm also doing well. Just got done playing Supervive for 4 days straight. I mean, it's been a week since then, but it, had to recover for a few days for this episode.
Always got to recover. But we got something special today. We don't got just one guest, all right? I was thinking it was just going to be one, but we got two awesome guests with us here today. First and foremost, let me introduce the lead game systems designer, Andrew Yip, aka Umbridge. How you doing?
Howdy, howdy.
And we have our staff technical designer, Kyle Leach, aka Talitch. How you doing?
What's up? I'm doing good. Happy
awesome.
To be here.
Awesome. We're
You're
excited to have you.
You mean well?
I'm doing great. How's great?
Okay. That's
what? How does he get out free?
Ferdy's like,
I can't,
like,
I hear it. It's like a neuron activation, okay?
It's exciting to have you two here with us today. We're recording this 6 p.m. CST, September 13th, 2024. Always got to put that on the little thing. How you two doing? It's great seeing you on here. Obviously, we kind of all know about you, but maybe some of the people at home don't know about you. So if you would like to introduce yourselves a little bit. I know we did have a question on Twitter. I'm already going to hit you with this, Umbridge. New001 asked on Twitter, what does Umbridge mean?
Oh, dude. it was my World of Warcraft rogue character name. We'll go with that.
That's based.
Cool. Okay. It is not the Harry Potter professor. That is spelled differently.
Okay. Developing wise, Acolytes, where you come from, where have you gone through the journey to get here to TC?
Yeah. This is year 20 of my game developer journey. So it's been a long one. I've worked on a variety of games. Before Theorycraft, I worked on Legends of Runeterra, which is a card game. And that kind of harkens back to how I got my start in game design, which was actually working on analog paper card games and board games at a company called Upper Deck, which made Yu-Gi-Oh! And Marvel and DC card games. So kind of a board game guy at heart, but made the transition over to video games.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I definitely remember seeing you on the Legends of Runeterra announcement trailer. It was so cool and everything. I was like, oh my gosh, now we got Andrew Yip over here on Theorycraft. Exciting, exciting. Talitch, where have you come from? What's the journey been for you? How's it been like for you getting here to TC?
Yeah, I'm not quite at 20 years yet myself. I'm a little newer. Mostly before Theorycraft, I worked at Riot. So I worked on the client of the League client, the new one that everyone hates. I worked on that one. I worked on when it became 10 bands, like when you went from having one person. I don't even remember what the original ban was, but when it turned into everyone gets to ban one character, that was like the first major feature I worked on. And then I helped ship a Jackbox Party Pack. Pack 5, the one with the robots rapping against each other.
That's a fun one.
And my voice is actually in, we did You Don't Know Jack on that one, and my voice is in a couple of the commercials for that You Don't Know Jack. They play during the end credits. So if you finish a game and then you're just sitting there, there are like all these stupid commercials and you can hear my stupid voice in some of them. and then I worked at Riot again. I worked on Valorant. And all of this is as an engineer. The only thing I ever did design-wise before Theorycraft was I worked on the escalation game mode on Valorant, which was like our gun game. And that was like, gun game was something I loved on CS and finally got to like take a swing at designing a mode. So I made my version of gun game over there, which was fun. And then, been doing all kinds of engineering and design work on Supervive, aka Loki. For the past 3.5 years now. It's crazy.
I know. It is crazy. It is crazy. It's crazy. It's been a long journey. It took a long time to get here. How was the playtesting week? How was the just overall generic feelings? Was it fun, exciting, exhausting, great, you know?
I
think it went pretty well. Yeah.
All right. That's good. That's good.
How often do you guys get a play in the playtest? Because I know it's during some of your working hours.
So it was kind of weird because I think as our timelines get longer for our playtests, it becomes less appropriate to just grind the entire time. Like when we did 3 days before and it would be like 3.5-4 hours, mostly at my nighttime, I was like, yeah, if I have to like skip a couple hours of work, I'm playing the whole window. But now it's like 12 hours throughout the day, and I'm like, I'm like skipping work if I play the whole window. So it hasn't been the whole window, but I would say we get out there. I played a bunch of games this time. It was a blast.
I just realized the last playtest that there's actually a playtest calendar that like gets like superimposed on our workday calendars, but I didn't have it. And so like every playtest, all my teammates would just disappear. And I'd be like, where the fuck is everyone? And they were playing the game. And I would just be doing work like an idiot. So, I do try to get, I do get into every playtest. But yeah, as we, try to get our game closer and closer to, launch ready. There's a lot to do.
Makes sense.
That's awesome. It was definitely an exciting one. I had a great week. I thought it was a lot of fun. So like, bravo to building up for this one. This playtest was a lot of fun for me, especially with it being kind of longer. It was also really nice because I played with a variety of groups, variety of people, versus where it's always been like, I got to find my solid groups that we're locked in for the 4 hours. Don't have to worry about it. But it was kind of fun. I had a good time around the board overall. Awesome.
Yeah, making equipment interesting again or interesting for the first time is kind of like one of our design white whales. So it feels pretty good to make. So I think this playtest, Kyle and I were both holding our breath, and then afterwards I think we feel pretty good and we're able to exhale. So yeah, that was huge for us.
No, that's really awesome. And one thing, did you guys have any like favorite moments either if in this playtest or like kind of leading up to this playtest? Like it could be anything around the board,
or like game breaking bugs that almost made it into the playtest or something like that.
Sure. I'll go first so you can think about it a little bit, but I had a really funny story that I have to say. I shared it on Twitter a little bit, but basically for the first day I was like getting like 200 ping and 100 ping on it, and I was like, this is not right. This is not real. This is not how the game works. Okay. I get 30 and 20 ping on an A and then I get 100 on EU. So I'm like, all right, I'm calling up Spectrum. I'm like, lo and behold, Spectrum guy comes out, right? And I left SuperVive up on the screen. I'm just like sitting there like talking to the guy. He's over here fixing the router, fixing the thing, and like he's talking. He's like, what's that on your screen? Is that like Valorant or something? And I said, No. I said, it's this new hit game that's, it's still in development, but it's this new hit game called SuperVive. And I was like, just prepare yourself because we're going to go down a rabbit hole. So I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole myself, but I was explaining the game, talking about it. I was like, it's really fun. It's like made by a bunch of developers who've developed a bunch of games you probably know, played, even the Valorant ones, that kind of thing. And he's like, sick. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, do you want like, because like, we were given some keys. So I'm like, do you want a key? And so I gave him a key. So I thought that was kind of
you sold SuperVive to your Spectrum guy.
Yeah.
Spectrum. You did work.
I gave him a key. I was like, hey, you know what? You want
the true grassroots army.
Hey, yeah. Listen. I'm not here doing the real work. I was min maxing SuperVive whenever
can you
I can.
Check it out.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I gave him the key. Like he said, he games in his free time. So I said, hopefully. So.
I got one that came to mind of favorite moment of the playtest. I actually shared this internally. I should like tweet these things out. I have like a clip that I had to like trim twice because it started out, I think, 10 minutes long, and I had to trim it down to 8 and then down to 6 so that I could like share it because the file size was so big. But it was an entire end game where we were in north of the stacks, those falling tiles, that zone.
Yeah.
It was an end game that closed there. And my team, I was playing with my friends, and they just like kept inting into the abyss because it's that area is hard to stay alive in. And like, I think I hit like 3 different most wanteds, and I was like just dancing on these tiles, like sitting on death boxes and just like basically solo living and pulling my team kicking and screaming until the end game. And then the game ended with me rezzing them one last time as the final circle was closing, as they get rezzed, I get hooked in by a kingpin and slammed into the abyss. And then I'm just like, I don't know, guys, I killed one of them. There are three alive. Good luck. And then all three of them get spiked and the game's over. But it was like, I'll remember that end game forever. It was a ton of fun. Yeah. And I was playing Bishop, my main, who, you know, was pretty buffed this playtest, which was pretty cool. And I had hover wings, so I was flying all around because that tech is really great. So it was just good time. Yeah.
Dude, your answer is such a good example of the contrast between you and I, because my answer is so boring. So basically, like, the playtest is happening and I'm like digging into like just the stats and numbers on a lot of the evolves because I hadn't really gotten a chance to like do a thorough pass. And I was looking at greed and I don't even know what we call it, greed or wealth. And I was like, greed, this thing is off by like sixfold. I wonder if players figured it out. And then one of our other teammates like pulled the data out of the playtest and it was like, man, you guys figured it out so fast. And it was like, was it too good? It was so too good. Yeah, for me, that was just, you know, a delightful reminder that there are no bugs, really. There's just like unintended outcomes. You guys have to, you know the bugs. For me, that's like one of the exciting things as a player is like, you know, trying to discover combos that are like, you know, too good and or better than intended. And yep, you guys continue to find those way faster than we do.
Hey, good thing we have these playtests. Find the meta quickly. I know Fernie and Lemur also had some favorite moments. So whoever wants to go.
Yeah. I mean, my camera just completely fell down. I'll fix that at some point. But I have two favorite moments. I'm going to cheat.
Okay.
Because one's short. One was the first show match in NA. I was trying to play Jewel, and I saw like her yellow hair, and I accidentally clicked Zeph because he has yellow hair.
You were playing Zeph?
Yeah, and I actually picked Zeph and stole it from Moore, my teammate, who, you know, plays a lot as Zeph. So we ended up still winning the match, and I thought that was just like such a funny moment. Like at the time, I was really upset because I was like, "Dang it, this is why we're gonna lose." But it was really funny.
That's good.
And then my second moment was we just come off like a few wins against a specific team. I won't name any names, but they were clearly a little tilted and upset that we had won a lot of games. So level one, they had, or like level two or three, they had gotten some good picks on us, which like played badly. And so then they proceeded to chase us around the map for the next like 10 minutes. They would just spam UAVs across the map for literally 10 minutes. And we're all just in the storm together, just griefing each other. And we eventually came out and won the game, which was really satisfying, and maybe threw a few clown emojis for them.
Yo, my bad, Lemur. Yeah, I was so tilted at you. You know, I just had to make your game terrible. So, no, those are some really good moments. Mine is definitely the Weedle Twitter clip from Showmatch Day 2, which, I mean, if you want to pull it up, feel free to, of course. But, basically what happened is, I don't know, the three of us, we died because we were being stupid or something. And then Weedle is left alive. And I'm telling you, it's like a very, very terrible position. He's at like the very edge of the circle. There's like eight teams left and it's like night three or something. He somehow gets a most wanted and he has, so obviously like invis is pretty bad now, like the invis pots, because they popped like really easily. And he somehow got Brushwhacker and he was dipping and diving in between bushes, like right in front of people that were like they were camping a most wanted basically. And I can't remember if you got that one and got out or you got a different one, but you ended up with one of them and you were sitting here for like a minute and a half, just like dodging so much, like three different teams. And then eventually you like pathed your way around and you saw they were like all stacked on top of a box or something. And one of them had the most wanted that they were guarding. It was like, I don't know, like 40 seconds left or something. And you walk up with Bushwhacker and you Bishop punch. And then I was like popping off. And then it looked like the fight was over and like you weren't going to get the kill for like 2 seconds because you were really far away. Mm-hmm. And then they were popping nuke or something. You Bishop ult, like thread the needle. And then like while you're flying by, you don't hit anybody, but you like LMB this guy twice. And then we're all back. And it was like the hypest thing I've seen in a while. So and you had to lock in. Everyone had to lock in because we were still fighting. So it was like
hey,
such an exciting moment. But yeah. That was fun to be a part of, even though I was just spectating during it. And then I walled somebody out to make sure we didn't die.
It was a very exciting moment for sure. And, you know, I got to thank Talich for that. The fact that Bishop ult can curve. You can move it. It's not just a straight line. It does have the ability to move a little bit. But, you know, housewarming out of the way. It's time to get into the nitty-gritty, all right? We got some questions for you. And you don't call them as spicy as you think they could have been. But you know what? We're excited to ask them anyways. So I know that, Fernie, for the most part, thank you for compiling a lot of the list. I know a lot of these are going to be from Reddit. We're going to have some of these from Twitter. And then some of our own personal questions tossed in. So we're going to try to pronounce.
As well as anyone in the Twitch chat currently, if wants to throw in a question, we're open to that as well.
Yeah, exactly. So
spicy, because we're lacking spice. Allegedly.
We're lacking some spice, apparently. So I'm going to start it off asking the first question here. I'm just going to go from our list, not like personal, but just from some people. So from Fate Strikes, I believe this was over on Reddit. The LMB amp and the ability amp lock characters into an item they may not want, and although some of the passives are cool, you just build OP stat sticks. Personally, I'd like the stats to detach for the items so you can play Vamp Blade with any one of the new passives instead of being locked to 3. What are your thoughts on something like this?
Yeah, should I go? Yep. I
guess. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so I think to try to give where we were coming from with those amps. For me, it goes all the way back to looking at characters in League that can build AD or AP and get certain benefits from either. And I think as the game's progressed, that has kind of gotten phased out. We've had a lot of discussions within the dev team of could we do something like that or not? Because it feels like League has decided that kind of thing doesn't really work. And it you end up seeing champs that are, I always forget the name. Champs, hunters, characters, heroes. I don't know. Champ.
Yeah.
That are really clearly telling you have to build this, and if you build the other stat, you're trolling. So long ago we had both AD and AP, and long ago characters kind of only could ever do one or the other. And then we kind of gave up, and we're just gonna have AP. One thing's gonna scale. But then the team continued to talk about how man, it would be really cool if I could build this character, and just fundamentally change where my damage is coming from in the kit. So that's kind of where this ability amp, LMB amp, alt amp idea came from, is let's, if we're going to try to change playstyles, let's not only do it through these passives, but also try doing it through stats by introducing new stats. And I think it worked, but I think one of the risks that we called out was that people would feel boxed in. You'd feel I can't even think about half of these passives because the stat's so important that it dictates what I can pick. And I think to be totally transparent, we kind of had soured on the stats before the playtest started, 3 day. Yip and I talked about it quite a bit, and we were should we just pull these? We don't really
don't... 5 p.m. 1 hour before build cut.
We're these probably aren't gonna make it. And we decided to leave them for two reasons. One reason was we knew that we were gonna be destabilizing combat to begin with. But we felt at least what we were playing with up until then was pretty representative of what our Super Vive combat is. So we're if we rip it out, we're going to be in balance hell, and we're going to need to do a lot of hot fixes to get back to a decent state. And then the other one, which I think is more interesting, is we kind of wanted to just see what players did with it and be we think we understand what these stats are doing, and we kind of feel they're probably not worth it, but let's see if players convince us otherwise, and let's see if people are no, these are actually both really interesting, and it's complementary with the passives, and it opens up this whole new opportunity space, and maybe there are things we didn't even realize about them that we'll learn. But yeah, I think after testing it, we felt sort of assured that our judgment was correct. We saw everyone kind of saying either neutral to negative on these amps, and nobody really saying these amps are incredible and we must keep them. So we tore them out within a couple days after the playtest, or maybe even during the playtest internally. So TLDR, we don't feel that test was successful with the amps specifically. We've removed them and returned back to just flat AP. So now if you want to build a glass cannon item, you can build any of the four and they evolve and you can pick whatever evolution you want. They're like unbiased now.
Cool.
Yeah, I remember we talked about kind of two states, one which is kind of the state that we got, the result we got, and one where we might conclude the opposite, which was like the amps are actually like helping players. And the state that we described in that world is, oh, there's so many combinations and interesting builds even within the sort of like railroaded choices that players have with the amps, that it actually helps narrow like a overwhelming number of decisions into like a reasonable number of decisions. I think just given where, you know, the content with Evolves is today, it's much more like the players actually need to be able to choose from all of the Evolves, and amps just feel like, yeah, unnecessarily restricting in that world.
Yeah, that's, thank you for the answer on that. That is actually such a, I love the answer. The amplifications were something I was like, kind of like, I was also thinking back in my head, I was like, I don't know how this will feel, but like, you know, obviously I like to play everything out, so. Thank you for the answer on that one. And thank you, Fate Strikes, for that question. For any of Lamer, you got one you want to toss right now?
I want to talk about ability level ups. Okay. Something that I've had, like, I've seen many different iterations of ability level ups over the course of playtesting Loki or Supervive. And I think this one was maybe a good option. In the past, there was these things called talents, just for people who don't know what the talents were. Is essentially things like Void TP didn't initially teleport your entire team. It was a talent that you got a choice of three. So you had a choice between TPing your entire team, making your Void Bomb grow bigger, or becoming like invincible inside of your ulti. A lot of those things just got added onto the base kits of the characters, maybe because, you know, they were fun to play with. But I feel like, I guess my question is, with these level 3 and level 2 level ups, like changing how your character is being played or getting these powers, is like, what defines something that's fun to play with that you have to choose this game versus something that should just be on the base character? A character that I think that kind of got changed for the worse this playtest was Shrike. She doesn't get resets on her dash when she gets a kill anymore, and her cremation only applies on her grenade if you get it to level 3. So I kind of wonder, is like, what is the line that you draw where something is fun that you get to keep in the base character versus force it into a level up?
Yeah. all right, so I'll start with a fun snippet about Shrike.
You get to answer both of the parts of this.
yeah. I'll start with a fun snippet about Shrike. So I did the Shrike ability level changes. Even though I'm not Shrike's designer, I was like trying to help out and get them kind of like built up as quickly as possible. I made the decision to remove that reset on Nock from her kit, and I wrote that tooltip, but then I didn't actually do the functional change. So even though the tooltip said you don't get the reset until level 3, actually getting level 3 did nothing, and you had it from level 1.
That's good.
So yeah, we're, you know, I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, we're doing our best out here. That was a mistake. A cool part of it is people didn't notice, which is weird. Like, we have data on which level ups were picked, and like that one got picked more than the E level up, even though it functionally did nothing. So yeah, I guess maybe that's a good sort of metaphor for how these things are like a lot more about making you think differently. Like that is like the key goal with these things, and like the actual output, it's actually like it doesn't need to be super powerful as long as it feels different. But all that is to say, the Shrike ones are messed up. I already have changed that dash to be something else internally. Removing the Nock reset, even though I didn't do it, if I had done it, it would have been a mistake, because it sort of like reduces her kit and takes away wrinkles from her gameplay that like she kind of like needs to feel like a full character. So that was a bad one. We're still trying to figure out what the exact right shape is for these things, and we've tried this type of thing a lot. I think the biggest constraint, the trickiest part, is it's kind of similar to equipment, which is we want these to feel meaningful, but we also don't want to have to tell your enemies which ones you have. So that means like we don't want them to require a lot of art. We don't want to require like UI so that when I look at an enemy, I know exactly what equipment they have, or what ability level 3 they have. So like the sweet spot for these, I think, is like they change the way you think about the ability, but they don't change the way that other people have to play against you. And that's like, that's hard. That's not easy. So yeah, we're still learning. I think like this playtest, we learned a lot. And I think overall, like the simpler leveling decisions we're feeling pretty good about, and players generally received really well. I think like the Bishop one, I'm biased because, you know, I'm Bishop's designer and Bishop is my main, and she was the one that we like tested these with first, but her level ups were like really well received by players. And they all did feel like they weren't just added stats or added power. They were like, this gives you 3 different playstyle options. So I think like we want to trend in that direction and take the ones that were like, yeah, -3 second cooldown, +20% damage, try to make them like more interesting and less raw power, because like we think, and we've heard from you guys, that like those are more interesting and more exciting to engage with.
I'm going to age myself with this example a lot, which is fine because I already aged myself with my prior answers. But like, I kind of have thought of it as like the original StarCraft. I'm going to continue on this. The original StarCraft, like how each the factions are differentiated by kind of like how each of them make units, but like the combat units themselves, obviously they're different, but like they're how you interact with them is like pretty similar, right? But like playing Zerg versus playing Protoss versus playing Terran is like very different, in part because like how you got the Marine versus how you got a Zergling was like functionally very different. So it's kind of like the way I think Kyle expressed it is like the inputs or like how you think about your hero changes, but a lot of like the shape of your outputs are not, you know, substantially different.
All right. That's an interesting. I like the thought process behind it.
That helps actually a lot. Like, it would be kind of accept where they're going.
And now that we've said that out loud, I'm sure there's like 20% of them that totally break that rule. But like, yeah. North Stars and aspirations. Okay, they're not rules.
Hey, listen. It's okay if something breaks the game. Okay, it's like that's the fun part about Discovery.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's like I think we have like an internal design guardrail, we want to use it enough such that players recognize it, so that when we break the rules, it's exciting. Like if it's not perceivable, like kind of like what the, you know, design philosophy is, it's not actually exciting because players don't even recognize when you kind of break it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, Fernie, you got a question now?
Move it on. Yeah, so actually this one's from Bellissimo, which is funny, which makes me think there's an agenda for this question for some reason.
He's a plant in all of our morning meetings.
Yeah, right? he asked, were there any item passives you made that ended up on the cutting room floor? Are there passives you had ideas for but couldn't find the right execution? And this is probably in relation to like equipment.
Totally, yeah. So I think there's a Twitter question around like what I had taken from Legends of Runeterra or working on card games. Actually, like working on the Evolve content with Kyle is a great example where, you know, obviously like what you guys see is like individual content choices, but when we first approach it, a lot of it is, like Kyle mentioned, this idea of like basically trying to figure out what good looks like, and like creating, you know, throwing out statements of like, what if good looks like, you know, it changes the way you think about it, but it doesn't change the way your opponent plays against it. Cool. Let's make 50 ideas that represent specific pieces of content that we think are consistent with that philosophy. And then, you know, kind of like basically like just talk them out on as paper designs and basically see which kind of just like survive that little like, you know, verbal battle royale or whatever, and then implement them and then play test them and then, you know, go from there. So I didn't actually check the numbers. Kyle, you might have a better sense, but if I was guessing, I would guess that we probably paper designed maybe 6 times. That 6 sounds so precise. 5 times more than we implemented. And then of the ones we implemented, we probably cut half of them before they got to y'all. Before launch, we'll probably do it again. And, you know, a lot of that is we think we can, just generally having this attitude of like, probably the first pass wasn't the best pass, so like let's keep at it, and you know, the more we iterate, the more we'll learn.
Cool, awesome, yeah. Is there anything that you remember, like, you kind of wish you didn't cut out, or something that was, like, so crazy you're like, yeah, no, this is instantly, it's getting out of here, that, like, pops up?
Yeah, favorite behind the scenes.
Go ahead.
I think that they were, I don't know if they were in the veteran test or not, but the, like, glider boots, were they, did you guys play with those?
Yeah. They were about to be, but they got cut last second.
Yeah, they were wild. They were, like... I mean, movement in the game feels great, so having boots that just, like, give you insane movement just for taking, like, a regular atomic action, like, man, that felt good. But it felt so good that it was, like, I can't, why would I even think about anything else? These are incredible. Yep. And, like, I don't know, like, that shape, I don't know if I wish had worked or will come back, but I think, like, boots that make you feel like you can move differently in an appreciable way are exciting. Like, way back in the day, we had different boot variants, and one of the boots that I built that, you know, we played with and then got cut were called Schmovement boots, and they were like, I think they gave you some weird bonus for, like, if you start gliding and then jump, you get a bigger jump, and if you jump on the rail, you start to grind faster, and then basically it was like rewarding switching between movement modes, and it kind of felt like you could get into this fugue state of, like, weaving them all together and just, like, really, really schmoving. You know, also... that's wild because it basically says, like, you must take these if you want to optimize traversal, but something in that shape that, like, lets you move and feel good about opting into, like, weird little movement tech, I would love to see again.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. It would be cool just to, like, just have them in there in the practice mode. Don't even actually have them in the real game. Just let me just go around and mess with them and just, like, see how they play or see how funny they are. So yeah. Unbridge, you got it. You got any one of the something that was behind the scenes that you're like, ooh, I like this, but I know that it's not.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I try to advocate that we make, like, just a ton of content is so that we kind of get numb to killing our babies. So I know that there were some on the spreadsheet, and kind of like the glider boots is probably the one that is the most painful, just because we tried it. I think one of our internal games we tried it, we also got glide infinite stamina. So people, it was like just wild times.
You were flying.
I think our director posted feedback in our Slack that was just like glider boots, no notes. So that was probably the specific one. But we actually, like, in our paper design spreadsheet, we actually had, like, basically like a veto column where any of us could, like, vote, like, please don't do this. It is jail. And yeah, there's definitely a reasonable number of mine that got jailed preemptively.
I know. Like you said, though, fair enough. Got to get the paper designs. You got to get as much out there, get numb to it. Staying on to the point of equipment, obviously, here, one thing that I'm super curious about, because I've been pushing for hyperscaling, and I, you know, we started to see just a little bit of that with, like, Apotheosis, with Greed, we started to see some of that, and, you know, I'm waiting for a Hunter one day, but do you have any more plans or thoughts about hyperscaling in the game, whether that be in Hunters, items, powers?
Me or you? Yep.
I know his games. That's all you, buddy.
All right, cool. Right. So I think, like, out the gate, we sort of are capable, or I think we can do less than a game like League or like a MOBA in terms of, like, hyperscaling, simply because, like, the team that you end up fighting against at the end of the game, it's not their fault that you got to scale as much as you did. Like, right. They don't have any control over that. So then it becomes either, like, everyone is racing to scale and the game becomes only about hyperscaling, or it becomes, like, you just get into an endgame and you're like, oh yeah, like, they did something that I had no knowledge or control over and I just lost because of it. So I think the ceiling, or, like, the space for that is just kind of baseline lower in Loki, which is a bummer. Sorry, Supervive. The real name, Supervive. But I also think, like, I think that just means that we have to get creative about it. And I think, like, Greed is an example of us trying to get creative about it and saying, like, yeah, here's a strategic resource that we already, like, are pretty comfortable with how we dole out, and everyone kind of has a way to pursue it if they want to. And then I think the rewards we tested were over the line. So I think the question will be, like, what's it feel like with this reduced amount of reward? And then I think the next question is, like, are there versions of scaling that could be built into a passive or a kit that would feel more compelling but still fair. Like, I think Kingpin kind of has this, and I think, like, it's been tricky to balance his passive, but when you do get on a roll, you can really, like, you can feel your health bar getting real chonky, and that feels pretty good. But yeah, like, what's our version of, like, a Thresh passive or, like, a Bard passive look like? And, like, how could we build that in a way that, like, gives the character an appreciable weakness and doesn't feel unfair if they truly do get to the hyperscaling moment?
No, yeah.
Yeah, Kyle kind of highlighted one of our, you know, sacred cows, which is, like, come final two or last two or three teams, like, we want all the teams to feel like they have a credible shot. And that both is, like, how many on their squad is alive. That's, like, how powerful can the range be? I think if we were interested in pursuing player stats can go higher, I think that inevitably would get coupled with more rubber banding in the game. You know, so, like, we already see this with, like, certain like revive actions, like when you get revived with, like, Most Wanted, will rubber band you your level back up. You would likely need to see a lot more of that with scaling. So it's one of those, like, weird arms racy things where it's like, yeah, we can make the numbers go up, but then we would also make everyone else's numbers go up, and those their numbers would go up in ways that kind of feel like Nintendo-y unearned. And so, like, net, we don't actually know if that's better, you know, and it's a lot of work. So, you know, that's kind of why I think we're on the path that we're on.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm like I said, I know, I always said, I know it'd be tricky because, Tleach said, it is one of those problems where it's like, well, the whole game does turn into everyone's picking this hunter, everyone's going this item, they are forcing themselves to be the hyperscaler in the game because you just have to, like, you're forced to now. So, thank you. That was a great answer. That was my own personal question, so I wasn't anybody else. That was something I wanted to know about.
That was reasonable spice. Medium spice. I like it.
Medium spice. Okay. All right. Lemur, you got something spicier? Not
spicy, but I did want to talk about equipment a bit more. Obviously, we touched on Greed just being completely overtuned. But do you guys like, if Greed is in the game and, say, it is strong when you get Greed, do you guys like the, you know, kind of situation where you have to give away your money to someone on your team and then you kind of get less agency in the game? I personally hated it. I hated giving my money because it was so strong. It was like, I don't get to use the shops because I'm just giving Phenom and Abador my money every game, and I just am sad.
They're robbing you.
Yeah, I literally got robbed. My lunch money.
I would say the jury is out. This is, I mean, your question is literally like a Slack discussion on our internal Slack right now. So I think there are some people on our team that like the quest and like the ability to help out their teammate and deliberately, like, kind of choose a funnel strategy. And then there are other players and support players particularly who don't like that, right? That was kind of like the goal of that particular Evolve piece of content. Oh, is Puff in chat? Okay, no. He just got happy for some reason. We talk a lot about the games that inspired us, sort of what are the styles of decisions and strategies that you can uniquely make in those games, and how, and basically, like, what is the supervive equivalent or version, or how do we make that, you know, choice available but still feel like, you know, true to our game, right? And this idea of basically creating not necessarily like a hyper scaling, you know, AD carry or whatever, but saying, like, hey, you're the hero on our team, like, we're going to deliberately choose that, is something that I think is a cool, you know, strategy. The question is just like, well, how frequently does it happen? How available is that choice? And how often is it correct? When it feels like it's the dominant choice that every team has to make every game, I think players who dislike giving up gold don't feel like they have outs, you know, whereas if it's not obviously correct, you know, a significant portion of the time, then I think it's totally fine.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. If I didn't have to do it every game, maybe I wouldn't be so upset.
I say it's also kind of crazy when you have to, like, you know, let's say you had like a Felix, a Bishop, and an Oath on your team, and they all were going Greed, and now you're like fighting over, oh, who gets it more? Who's more important on the team? Who should get the stats? You know, that kind of thing. So, like, the multitude of the item as well is kind of a thought process to think behind. Fernie, You got a question?
Yeah, so kind of bouncing off that, and I think you two alluded to it a little bit, but this is like a personal question for me. So obviously, like, all of us have been around for quite a while, so we've seen like some crazy stuff get added and removed from the game. And as of late, me personally, I feel like things have been a lot more tame and like safe, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And even when you have something like one test with like Greed and Mindblade and people are like only building that, right? Even though the system underlying is like really cool and it has a lot of potential, even if you have something like that, it seems like people get like pretty upset or frustrated, like just on and hyper focus on that alone, right? Does that kind of make you all like wary of doing stuff even like more than that or trying to push it a little further in terms of like uniqueness and stuff like that? So I guess, and I'm kind of curious too on like, would you rather like, you know, nerf this stuff into the ground or kind of make everything else like stronger and raise the power level like as a whole in that, like a specific system or something?
We can maybe start with the last question and
Roll
back. I think a lot of it is just depends on kind of like where did we land relative to kind of our combat outcome goals, where if we're in a scenario where, yeah, like you have to snowball a certain player, and if you do, you clamp the lobby, and if you don't, you get eliminated early and you go next, like maybe we're okay with that happening X percent of the time, but if we're like three times that, like we're going to like use that as one of the big data points to be like, probably the answer should be tune that particular piece of content back, not bringing everything else up to it, you know? Mm-hmm. Kyle, you can probably speak to that point better.
I think that we have a desire to build things that are exciting and surprising, like just straight up. Like that's exciting for us. We like to see people react to it. We like to see clips of crazy shit happening. So I think like players picking out things that are insane and complaining about them, like we read that, and if we feel like there's enough perception that issue that like it is making people not like the game or want to do something else, then yeah, we'll change it. But I think an example of, and maybe I'll get in trouble for this, but an example of a thing that hasn't been fixed but we've known about for a long time, mm-hmm. is the hover wings, like Bishop Tech, like the fact that you can go flying. Like I had a game this morning that had one of the most dramatic finishes ever. And it only happened because of that tech. And the anecdote I mentioned to you guys earlier also did. It's like, those are things that I think, like, if someone sees on someone else's screen, they're like, what is that game? I want to try that game. So that stuff is exciting to us. I think where we have to have some pause is, like, viewing all of the systems and how they're all intertwined in our game. It's easy to make one change that has, like, ripple effects throughout the entire game. That, like, yeah, it's like, when we're building this equipment system, a lot of the feedback we got was like, I wish it was crazier. And we were like, if it were crazier, then it could completely warp combat and it could become something that we can't even get good feedback on because the game that people are playing doesn't look like the game that they know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we're always kind of like walking that balance and trying to keep the game looking like the game that we know, but like introduce things that are delightful and surprising. Like, and like on top of all of it, like we're trying to finish the game. So the fact that things have felt tamer lately, I think it makes sense because it's like we're doing all the work that isn't as exciting too. And it's like we're juggling all that together.
Cool. Yeah. I was just curious I was curious. So I appreciate that.
One thing that does come to like one question, and this is from Levo 42. And this is kind of goes with that, like seeing the builds, that kind of thing. So what is Theorycraft's vision of character builds? Like, should it be possible to be a full tank strike or full DPS oath? Like, or is the idea supposed to be kind of limited to like a flavor of their gameplay? Also, how much should a successful item build configuration have an advantage over one that just ended up having to build what he or she found with scraps? Like, how do you end up measuring the impact of that overall?
Cal, you want to talk about kind of like hunter visions, then I can talk about general loadout.
Yeah. I think like, so I think this, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I think the important thing is when I see a hunter, I generally understand how to play against them. It's Yip's inputs and outputs thing. Like, if I see a flex, a Shiv, I should see her and know she's gonna try to basic attack me and dash and basic attack me. She has to be close to me, and if she's close to me and I let her keep hitting me, I'm fucked. Like those things are like important and core. So if she's like able to like have this sort of like niche build where like her dagger is one-shotting people from behind, which that used to be a mechanic,
imagine.
By the way.
Be the coolest mechanic ever, just saying.
Yeah, and it was a cool mechanic. But like if there's like a 1 in 10 chance that a Shiv that I see can one-shot me with a dagger from behind, I think that starts to become like, yeah, like how do I even think about approaching fights when I don't know what the hunter's going to do? That being said, like I think the whole idea with this equipment system was to like let people lean into their own playstyles. So an example that I really like that I've seen people internally doing, I don't know if people are doing it in the 3-day or not, is running Vive Infuser on Shiv. Did you guys ever do that?
Yes. So Transy came in my chat. I was like, oh, you need to go Vive Infuser, Swiftblade. I'm telling you, tech.
Right.
And so I did.
So it's like that kind of thing to me is like, if we don't let you do that and find some amount of success, we're kind of trolling and the system's failing. But also, if that is a must build best in slot item that lets you still do everything you could do but just do it better and tankier, then it's also failing. So like I think that type of build and that type of like kind of crazy strategic situational play style, those are really good. But like, I think they need to feel like you're doing an off build. So like, if you do that on Shiv and it's the best thing, then like we need to look at Shiv or look at that item. But if you do it and you're like, yeah, I'm doing like so little damage with every attack, I have to hit people twice as much as before, but it's fun and I have this regen that I don't usually have, I think that's really cool. And it keeps the general shape of her the same. And the only actual real change is that she doesn't hurt as bad as normal. So like, I think the counterplay there is really interesting and fun. Yeah.
Right on. On kind of like on the sort of broader topic of like, you know, what's like the vision for like character loadouts with respect to like ability levels and items and powers, like all up. I think the first time I presented about this topic, like at a company offsite, I used the improvise, adapt, overcome meme guy. I don't know if that's like a current thing or not, but to me, that's like the perfect articulation of like what outcomes we want, which is, you know, as designers, we want to give players a bunch of tools that are, you know, sort of like easy to learn, but have a lot of use cases that make it like deep and interesting to master. And then basically kind of like, you know, like, I mean, in this case, literally drop them into an island where random shit happens, and the player's ability to use their knowledge of their tools and adapt and, you know, win and overcome the situation is kind of like the dream scenario, right? So even though we reliably give players, you know, these basic item drops and the evolved choices, I think what good looks like there is good does not look like you pick the same evolved every single game. But probably if you pick completely random ones, or if you don't get to pick at all, like that's a fail state too. So we're trying to kind of hit this sweet spot where a lot of games, you are kind of just like flowing into your comfort selections with those evolves. But some games, something will happen, like, oh, like you have a, you know, a fourth person on your squad. They pick a healer hero, which you usually don't have. So you don't pick, you go off your healing, your self-heal evolve and, you know, pick something more DPS heavy. Or, you know, you find an early, like a day one blue item evolve that you wouldn't normally consider, but it just, it has, you know, the possibility of just like catapulting you ahead if you can figure out how to use it. Or like, you know, greed is like a good example, like, oh, you were behind in the game. And so, you know, your team is like really down on gold. Normally you would totally go, your team would totally go greed, but in this game they can't. So, you know, the question for us now is, given that evolves and ability levels are like reliably available choices, are there enough kind of other random events that would cause you to kind of get out of your default position and force you to, you know, adapt and make different choices with the choices that you have?
I like that. I like the thought process of like one thing that major, like, has stuck in my head since you mentioned it was like, you know, the different selection of hunters changes the way you think about how you're going to build, right? Like, if we're playing in a whole DPS squad, we're going to be relying on our own heals. Like, we have our own self heals versus, like, you know, when you're playing in a squad where it's like, okay, I got an Oath, I have a Zeph, like, why should I build something that heals me? You know, like, I should just build something more damage. Like, I'm literally trolling if I just build heals, you know? So it's really good to think about. Really cool, really neat design behind the brains of the operation, that kind of thing. So I really like that.
I think one of the problems that, I guess, is if you're playing the same team comp over and over and over and over again, it's mm-hmm. like,
yep.
you are building roughly the same items every time. For me personally, I wish that there was a little bit more things in, like, the environment that, like, oh, it's ending in the, you know, top right where yep. Talich's islands were ending. Like, maybe if I had the glider boots, like,
I'm with you, man.
Yeah, like,
that's why.
Oh,
he's gone.
I'm with you, man. DCs.
Hold on. I'm back on.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Hey. You were not with us apparently, but it's okay,
dude. I was like, did my mic go out of range? Did I like shout too loud? I like canceled myself.
You're too excited. Yeah.
So I very much agree with you. I mean, like, one of the other big sources of variance that could change up your picks is the storm shift. And where the final circle is, you know, that was why Ambrush was one of the pieces of content was like pieces of evolves that care about the biome, you know, but as you pointed out, like, that really is only an available choice if final destination is the storm shift. So we kind of have to find other ways to, you know, make those varying events impact your evolves, and some of that is what are the events that can change it, and some of that is like, well, what are the choices that we even give you in the first place.
Yeah, I definitely like that philosophy a lot as a player. I think it'd be really cool because, like you said, final destination, that's like the only storm shift where you kind of like can pre-plan really early in the game for something like that. And I have like this like gameplay fantasy of like, okay, it's so easy to hit like a level 3 piece of equipment and like choose an evolve, right? So I think it'd be really cool, like, if it's super late game, you're seeing, okay, the circle is going like, you know, top right of the zone with like by stacks, right? Let me pick up this like level 2 piece of equipment and then evolve it with a shard I just got from a team fight and like completely drop my like level 6 right. equipment item so that I can get this better like passive and like change my playstyle like right on the fly. I think that is really fun. And I definitely don't see it like a ton, at least in this playtest I didn't. Whether or not that's because, you know, like greed and Mindblade, or like maybe they just need to be, you know, like you said, tuned a little more, worked on a little more, things need to be figured out. But it's really comforting to hear that, like for me at least, because that's like, that would be really awesome. I like, you know, dropping like powers, picking up new powers depending on where yep. you are, if equipment can do that too, that seems really fun. So
yeah, I was about to say, when it comes to like the sort of final biomes in particular, it's I think much more likely that we can achieve that sort of dynamicism with powers than with equipment, because just yeah. because the switch cost is, you know, much easier, much lower. Right. And just the raw timing of like, you're getting a blue at the end of day one, like good luck guessing, you know, what the final circle is going to be.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Sweet.
We did have a very, this is a very important question for both of you. Okay. I want you to really think about this one. Okay. Excel Turbo on Twitter asked, how many mozzarella sticks could you eat in one sitting? Marinara is available. This is important.
Do you have to chew or can you just swallow it?
Hey, it's up to you.
It's however you interpret the question.
Like, think about it. Think about it. How many do you think you can do? I thought about this myself.
That question is ridiculous. If you... like, even if you could just swallow it, it would ruin your throat. That would make you able to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a non-starter for me because I'm lactose intolerant.
That's a stalling question.
So like any amount is like I'm dead. I'm dead. So yeah.
Well, maybe the last one you swallow.
Okay, so what's like an appetizer of mozzarella sticks? Like 5 or 5 to 8 usually?
If you
like
go to a restaurant. Yeah. The restaurant yeah. I serve at, it's 7.
Oh, mozzarella sticks. I thought we were talking about the cheese, like the peeling cheese sticks. Yeah, I'm not solely no mozzarella stick. Sorry, I have two young sharp on the outside.
Yeah. That's yeah. even crazier than you thought, because those are bigger.
I hope nobody clipped me asking that question.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
I feel like I clipped like 20. I could eat 20 probably.
Oh, gross, dude.
It would suck. Yeah. I did like a challenge in college where I tried to eat 24 donuts in a day, and you get to like donut 4.5 and they like stop tasting good. Oh, yeah. And they just like go in your mouth, and then like it's effort to swallow them. So I think it like becomes a psychological thing more than anything. I think you just feel gross after like probably 10 or 15.
Yeah, I've always wondered. I actually, when I saw this question, it made me think about like the hot dog eating contest. It's just like, how could I ever eat a normal hot dog if I ever participated in that event, like ever again? Like, I just don't feel like I can look at a hot dog and be like, yeah, this is appetizing. This is what I want, a New York style hot dog. Like, I would just be like, no, thank you. So, you know, I just want to add a little bit of a fun question in there.
I need more answers than just mine. Come on.
Okay, fine. So I thought about this. I was like, I was sitting there, had a shower thought. Okay, so I like read the question. I was like, all right, I'm going to go to the shower, right? Like, and I was like, I couldn't come up with it. So I said, now, probably 20, 21. And then after that, I'd be like sitting there, be like, oh, this is just annoying. But I think if I really locked in my prime, I can hit upwards the 50. I think I could do it in my prime. But now, we're hitting about 20, and then we're going to be like, yeah, I'm not eating anything else for the rest of the day, and I'm going to be sick. So count me clocked out.
How long do I have?
That wasn't even asked. I don't know. I feel like it's...
I'm going to assume it's like you can't like pause for more than like, you know, 45 seconds.
I would say you can't get sick. That would probably, because at some point you're gonna feel sick, you know what I mean? Like, you're gonna get to that point.
I think I'm topping out at like 15, and that's, I think I probably got anchored upwards from your guys' answers, so
I'm definitely like in the 10-15 area. There's no way I'm doing more than that.
Yeah, I'm probably around 10. I have a small stomach.
Kyle, our next offsite. I guess you know what we're doing, bro.
Mozzarella eating contest.
Theorycraft, like... mozzarella stick challenge.
Yeah, if we ever have a live Theorycraft event, we have to do that.
I'm gonna take so many lactate beforehand.
that was a good question. That was a good question, though. Nonetheless, but getting back more into the, talking about Super Vive. You know, maybe mozzarella sticks, maybe we'll add them into the game. You know, maybe we'll get like a mozzarella stick food skin, item skin, you know, stick. Instead of
we had hot dogs before. You guys remember?
And there we go. You know, maybe a mozzarella stick bouncing around as your wisp. That would be kind of cool. But one question that is on here. What are your favorite all-time things like you have developed? And this can be to Supervive, right? This can be in Supervive. This can be, you know, as your time on Valorant, if your time at Jackbox, LOR, whatever, you know, whatever it is. Favorite thing that you've like ever developed. If you have multiple, that's totally fine.
So I think I mentioned my first job was like working on physical card games. Mm-hmm. I worked on a Marvel trading card game. And I made a card. I was responsible for making a card for Galactus. Y'all know who Galactus is. And it was a scrappy org. So I also wrote all of the art descriptions. So I wrote an art description, and it was something like Galactus stands in, you know, Times Square, and he's so big that he's blocking out the sun. And normally, when you get these art, when you commission art, you'll get the art back in stages. Like, you'll get a sketch, you'll get like black and whites, and then you'll give feedback the whole time. This time, we had paid I can't say the name. We paid an expensive and renowned comic book artist, and he was just like, "Yeah, I'm just gonna do it. Like, I got it. This is automatic." And so we get it back, and it was like, it cost like 10 times our normal illustration because it's like a high rate dude, and we get it back, and it's a picture of Galactus holding his hand out in front of him, blocking out the sun. Like from like blinding himself, I was like, this is not it. So that's one of my favorite answers. Not because of the quality of the design or anything like that, just because it's probably one of my favorite stories of game design. Yeah.
we're giving you Walmart Galactus here. He has a hand in front of him. I didn't feel like going any further. You know, Talich, you got anything? You got anything crazy? Awesome. Exciting.
Yeah, I'll do a fun one. So when I started working at Riot, I was not on a game team. I was on like a internal tools team. Like we built like a company directory site for the company. Like it was like not doing, I joined to make games, but I didn't have experience, so I couldn't just go right into it. And I was working with another Theorycraft dev from day one. We became friends. We were both like pretty fresh out of college, Drew. I don't know if you guys have seen him out there. He's a beast. So he and I were friends day one working together. And Riot would do these things called Thunderdomes where you could like just spend a week doing whatever you want. So it's kind of like when we do Freaky Week and we just build whatever we want into Supervive. Mm-hmm. Riot had it like company-wide. It was called Thunderdomes. And there was one of them, and I was like, I want to make games. Like, that's why I'm here. I want to make games. So Drew and I teamed up, and we actually teamed up with Smitty, Loken, our art director. He worked with us the first time we did this, too. And we built a Towerfall clone. You guys know Towerfall? It's like a 2D platformer where you're, like, hopping around, and you have, like, bows and arrows.
Okay.
And it's one-shot kill. Yeah, you get hit by a bow, and you're just dead. And it's like a four-player versus game, basically, like super lethal platformer multiplayer game. We loved it. We would play it at my place like every night, all the time, just screaming at the TV with each other. So we built that in Game Maker with League champions as the like characters you're playing as. So there was like a little Teemo. He was like a little potato, and he would like jump and fall really fast. And he shot poison darts. We had Ashe, and she would shoot a frozen arrow and freeze you when it hit you. And we were just like, yeah, let's just do this. And like Smitty Loken, he did a lot of the pixel art. And like what we built in like 3 days was something that I was like incredibly proud of. And we got to like, they did a science fair where everyone would play the games, and we saw like people lining up to like play it and yell at each other, just like we yelled at our TV playing Towerfall. And it was like the first moment of like, oh, this is maybe what it's like to actually make games for realsies. And it was really, really cool. We like really wanted to try to get it made at Riot, but it never really worked out. But we built it in like three different engines after that and made a bunch of variants. And we like built Vi and Yasuo into a prototype, and they had their own abilities in the game, and it was dope. Like that type of game is really cool. Yeah.
That's really awesome. It's cool to hear about. I love like one thing I like a lot about Theorycraft, and it's something I always preach about, is like the openness and like loving to hear these conversations, these stories. It's just great to hear them, and it's like really cool to, you know, have you guys on here to be able to talk about these things. Lemur, Fernie, I know I've been asking a lot of questions. Do you guys have a question off the list that you want to toss on now?
I'll take one.
Okay.
So in Supervive, there are tanks or tankier characters, and there are supports or supportier characters, but these characters can still like kind of 1v1. But there's no real like real tank where it's like focused on tanking. You can maybe count Oath, but he could still kind of just like one-shot you. Do you think in Supervive it's like beneficial to have these characters that are more focused on solely healing or solely tanking, or do you think it's like super important that these characters have some way to 1vx?
I think sort of like a design pillar that will always be with us is if I'm the last person alive on my team, I have a chance. And like we've played, and you guys have probably played versions of the game that's just doesn't feel true. Like I remember early versions of Aluna, Seraph, she had like a squirrel on her shoulder and stuff. She would shot like this like laser gun that like was just like pew, pew, pew. It did like no damage at all. And like I remember the feeling of my team is dead, and like there's one or more people I have to fight. I just gotta go. I gotta get out of here. I need to res. I shouldn't even think about fighting. Like the like opportunity space is gone. And I think that's like, I think we never want to have that situation exist in the game. I think that's why like spiking is cool, because even if you feel at a huge disadvantage, if people are chasing you, you have a chance to get that like one action reversal. But yeah, I think like that is sort of like translated into like, we do want every hunter to have some baseline dueling potential. And I think like Aluna, to some, especially she's been kind of weak, but I think she's kind of like an example of someone who were like, yeah, she's not going to be as good at dueling as other characters. And it doesn't mean like she needs to straight up be able to damage race people, but she needs to be able to like attrition and like kite back and like use the map and be sort of annoying and just keep slapping you But if she does, there's a point where she can turn and stick up for herself and win. And I think that's like really critical. So I think we'll constantly keep trying and keep seeing how far we can push the support identity or the tank identity. But I don't think we'll ever like throw it out the window and be like, yeah, this character's just not going to be able to like put up a fight for themselves. I think that's like really critical for the game that we've built, that everyone needs to be able to do that.
Cool.
Man, thank you for the answer on that one. That's always been like a long term question, debate kind of thing. Like you said, though, with spiking, you'd still have that 1v6 potential. It's still there, still possible. But like, it's really neat to think about hard supports, hard tanks being directly in the meta or being able to be developed into the game. Fernie, question?
Yeah, so I got one more like viewer question. Going back to the equipment, so. And we kind of touched on this a little bit, but so back when the focus group came out before the equipment playtest, in the patch notes, whether or not this was your words or Pwiff's or someone else's, it was mentioned that some of the goals of the evolving equipment system were to, you know, have equipment choices kind of change how you play your hunter in a meaningful way and in a fun way too, right? While not trying to force, you know, them into specific builds or, you know, trying to force a certain like agenda for the hunter to do, right? Based on, you know, everything you've heard kind of today through the feedback of the tests, you know, the data that you've all been through, do you think it worked? Did you succeed on that front, or is it still a little shy? And this is a question from Pensado.
Kyle, you want to start or do you want me to go?
You go first. I'll go after.
So when we talk about these systems that, I often think of it as like the content versus like the system, where like the system is like, hey, at blue tier, you're going to get these three choices. The content is like, what's the individual evolve? I think we're really happy with the system, like the bones of how we surface decisions for, you know, two players and when they get to make them. I think we have a lot of room for improvement on the individual pieces of evolve content, whether that's like tuning or like the shape of the behavior that we ask from a player is like, not intuitive or is like too aligned with like what they would already do. So it doesn't actually result in like a play pattern change. And that, you know, that sentiment is you know, generated largely from the player feedback, both like the verbatims that we saw, as well as like we actually were both in a meeting this morning reviewing just like the pick rates for certain evolves. For evolves on a, you know, like per hunter basis. So yeah, that was kind of our set. That was where we were optimistically hoping the first blush of this system would land. Is cool. Like the bones are good. Now it's just content time. And largely we feel like we, you know, landed that. We absolutely didn't expect the content to be like the content we, you know, which would end up ultimately shipping the system with.
Yeah. Cool. So it sounds like the system is for sure staying, and now it's content time, is what I'm hearing.
Lock it in.
Okay, lock it in. All right.
We're evolving.
We're evolving.
I think, like, to add to that and just, like, try to give some perspective, like, we built this version of it in a month or so, which included building the entire system and all of the content. So, like, you know, if you had asked us before, we'd be like, yeah, I don't know, like, hopefully half of the content players resonate with players, and then we can replace the other half. And I don't know where it exactly ended up, but like the signal that we got is that people really enjoyed it. And I think like the content itself will be kind of something that's ever changing. Like if our game's successful, like, you know, items are going to get annoying or feel unbalanceable or unhealthy just over time, and we'll swap them out for other items, or items will feel stale and boring and we'll want to bring in something fresh or new. So like that type of content is something that like clearly isn't set in stone now. Like we will clearly continue to iterate until we feel good about this first set, but then like also isn't something that will like be long term the same. So we're still trying to like wrap our heads around where it landed and where combat is, but yeah, I think the thing I would call out from that framing of give people meaningful playstyles that are different is I think we kind of moved the way we thought about that a little bit as we developed it too, because like back to being a broken record, when you see a hunter, you should know what they're going to do. Like you should understand their outputs. So like if we were truly playstyle changing and turning them into different hunters, that would not be good. But I think like players like to play their heroes differently. There's like, I play bishop this way, and like Major plays bishop that way, or Mythy plays bishop a different way, and that's all good. And the goal is that like each of us has a set of items that we feel like complements what we want to do. It's not like I get this item and now I must do something I don't want to do or my hero doesn't want to do. It's like they should accentuate different parts of the heroes that we all like. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. That's good to hear. I definitely like have that urgent desire to like play one character, but be able to play them in like three completely different ways. And I think I need to get rid of this dream that abilities are going to do it, or like, because you make a very, very good point of, okay, if you see a character, the way Super Vive is so fast, if you aren't able to parse exactly like how they're going to play against you or how you can deal with them in like, you know, that very short like amount of seconds, you could just die, and it's not fun to play like that. If you get killed by something you didn't know they had, right? So I definitely get that. I'm coming more to terms with that. That's a personal like thing I have to become aware of, but I definitely like hearing that, especially because I know that like previously, like we mentioned talents before, they were really cool, but they definitely caused like some of that issue until, you know, stuff went back into their base kits, and then talents kind of disappeared for a year and a half. So I was basically getting at, I hope equipment doesn't disappear. This version of evolving equipment doesn't disappear for like a year and a half, which sounds like you guys are happy with it. So cool.
All right, Fernie, Lemur, I'm going to ask you, do you have another one last question? Either
now,
you
when is
ask?
Evolving Powers going to come out?
True!
We tried that. We tried. Yeah.
Oh, wait, really?
That's, that's jail. Yeah.
Yeah, remember Red Tier Powers? Remember
Yeah, I do.
Three separate option paths. Freaky week whenever stats were tied to powers as well. And then you'd get your stats from those guys. Oh, man. Great times. But Lemur, Fernie, any other, you know, final questions you want to hit before I'm going to hit you with the biggest question of them all of the night?
Oh, you're going to hit them with the biggest question.
What's the biggest?
Listen, any other questions, and then I'll hit them with it.
I have one tiny one.
Okay, that's fine.
Is there anything... Oh, go ahead. What's up?
No, I was after this, I also have a big question.
Okay.
So
is there anything that you can leak?
Okay. I guess that actually was more or less the question, but
what the heck?
Go ahead. Okay, anything.
You know,
go ahead.
Anything either that you're working on or that, you know, people might not know about, you know, something that you're looking forward to having, you know, people play or know about. Or is this just, nope.
They both got grins on their faces.
I mean, I feel like we already leaked the amps going away. So, you know, that's kind of a leak. I leaked some Shrike stuff. I don't know if I have another big leak. You got a leak? Yep.
Any new evolves next playtest.
Can you tell us one?
Nope.
We're desperate.
We'll take anything we can get.
I'm looking at our internal patch notes. Like,
I was gonna say,
like,
can you pull up the docs internally and like,
I'm like, which developer am I gonna make upset with me?
Oh, that's a good point, actually.
Just find something from JMO.
Hey? Yeah, pick JMO.
Yeah, pick something from JMO. You know, just
I'm not gonna get too specific. I'll say that, you know, this morning we play tested and there were like 10 patch notes were of significant changes, and yeah, I think that just highlights kind of like how we like to develop and how much, you know, we test internally and how much the game changes like day to day. So
cool.
Yeah,
awesome. I'll just toss mine then in there. Mine was basically just similar question, but it's like, is there anything like game system wise tech wise like any big like anything big we can expect coming forward? Because I know, like, obviously sometimes you're limited by the tech, sometimes you're limited by like, it's a big idea, but like we want to get out there. Is there anything you two would love to share that, you know, that you've been working on, like, really, like, without leaking, maybe, that you're excited for?
I guess I can do a leak that it's not a big deal, it's a tuning thing, but
okay,
hopefully people will be happy to hear, is like, yeah, we saw that it was tank meta and that lethality was a lot lower. I always get lethality and time to kill mixed up. It took longer to kill people this playtest, and like we were not super satisfied with that. So we are looking to walk things back towards the more lethal, more fast-paced Super Vive that we've grown to know and love. It was sort of like an intentional but kind of sneaky change that we did along with evolving equipment to like be like, all right, what happens if like the meta is a little tankier and if people have a little more time before they're dead? And like we learn stuff and that's good and we like need to keep learning stuff like that. But yeah, we're walking that back. We think like we took away more from like 1v1 potential in the game than we were hoping to. So we're trying to get back to combat that feels more similar to what it was before.
How do you measure like the lethality in a game? Because I felt like the time to kill was a lot faster, but maybe I was confused.
I mean, I think it's like in terms of like quantitative measurements, we don't have really clear ones currently. We know the changes that we made, which were, you know, people had more damage reduction than they did before. So like on paper, we feel pretty confident that it was like longer. And then also we just watch a shitload of footage, watch clips, we play it ourselves, and we're constantly tuning and making changes. So I think we are pretty confident that like it was longer, and like I can share clips that I've seen. But yeah, I think we do need quantitative ways, and that's something we're working on, but you know, we'll get to it when we get to it.
Go ahead. You ask it. Go ahead. That is
your final. Do I get the final question?
Yeah, your question is good. I like your question, so you can ask that final.
How do you know my question?
I read your mind. I don't just read your mind.
I don't know what to say.
I'm going to start this question off with, I think it will. But the question actually is do you guys think Supervive will succeed? And will it like become very, very big?
That's
my question.
Holy moly.
Bro, that's what we're here for. What are we talking about?
Good.
I love that. That confidence is huge. Like that's a reassurance actually as a player. It's like, of course. Like I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, this is something that like on the business side we probably almost never touch on, and I don't know, is Joe going to get upset with me if I do, but you know, I think one of the exciting things about being at Theorycraft is like we all came here for like very similar reasons, and like one of those reasons is like, you know, being able to make an awesome game that lots of players play, but also do it with like a pretty elite but small squad that gets paid if the game pops off. So like, you know, like all of our interests are aligned basically, like, and we just like making sweet shit that more people play than less. So it's, you know, pretty easy for us to get on board with that.
Yeah. I think like in my mind, it's like, I grew up as like obsessed with League. Like League is my most played game of all time. I love that game and that type of game, and played RTSs and other games before that because I'm old, but like I feel like I made it into building games, and that game is the game that it means the most to me. So like for me at least, I feel like this is like me putting everything I can into making a game that is like my love letter to that type of game, and also trying to advance the genre and take it in a different direction than people have done successfully so far. So like for me, it's like I really hope it's successful, because I think there's something really special that like, even when you look at it, you can't really tell. But then when you're in there and you're like flying around, spiking people, like dunking people into the abyss, grinding, fighting, punching people into the heart, like these are moments that like, yeah, I feel like they're really special and I'm really proud of. So even if the game doesn't succeed, and like, I think like we're giving it our truly best swing. Like I'm proud of what we made, so yeah, I hope so. Let's do it.
If you look at our perfors, there are a long list of late night check-ins right now, so like I think yeah, the team is going really hard. And so even though I said yes, and like I want to, and I do want the game to be as big as possible, I will say, and this is sort of anecdotal from my experience with last games, like, or prior games, like as a game developer, like I think there's like a threshold where like the number of players that play your game becomes just a number, like viscerally, you know, like day to day, if you're like a developer on a game that has 1 million players versus 100 million players, I personally can't say that materially changes my day to day. What does materially change my day to day is being able to have like meaningful interactions with players and just like see their passion for the game and share in that with them. And the more people that play the game, the more frequently you get to have that interaction, you know. That's the stuff that really like changes, you know, your sort of like moment to moment happiness in my experience. Like add a zero to the end and then it's like, you know, like, yeah, Joe will have a bigger house or whatever, but like outside of that, you know, like whatever, you know, like, yeah. So I just want to add a little bit of balance to my answer.
Cool.
That's great to hear. That's awesome to hear from both of you. And I just wanted to say thank you for everything both of you do, for everyone at the team, what they do. It is awesome that we get to even have these interactions with y'all. It's great. And it's like awesome that the community gets to kind of have these interactions with y'all. It's been an awesome ride and still going. We're still trekking on forward. So big shout out to both of you for coming out. Appreciate it a lot. On the Bellissimo one, we did ask if you wanted to ask us anything. You feel free. You could ask right now if you want to ask. If you have a question, shoot them at us real fast. We'll answer something for you.
I would have asked like, yeah, what your definition of like what good looks like for a vault and like loadouts and items, you know, looks like. But I think we actually see pretty eye to eye on that based on your guys' response to my answer. So,
yeah.
Cool. What do you guys think is missing? What do we need?
We need to be able to play the game.
Yeah. Servers. Where are they at?
I'll give it one thing where I personally look at this game and I'm like, I would love more hunter options. That's it. That's just for me. That's honestly it for me. Like, I'm looking at this. You guys keep doing great updates, great changes. The map keeps getting better every time. The design gets better every time. And, like, from no NDA to NDA to no NDA, the game went from, like, I said 5% to, like, 50%. Like, I literally saw the change, like, because we didn't see any of that. We didn't know that existed. And then it existed. It was, like, so cool. So, for me, I guess it's, you know, keep pumping the content. Like, that's what I love to see. Yeah. More content. It's always fun. New powers, new hunters, new items.
Oh, yes. Chip just said more drop variety. That's a spoiler. We got you, bro.
Okay.
There we go. Okay.
Nice. But yeah, honestly, the only thing that I'm like ever sad about when I'm playing Supervive is like, oh, I wish I could like play more characters. So, and I know they're in the works, so I've never really like complained ever, so except, you know, Death Knight, but that's a thing. Every episode.
I still think Volts could use some work. I think they're not as bad as they used to be, but sometimes I'm like,
when you say that, do you mean like the minigame or the rewards or something else?
Kind of everything. I think the minigame, yes. The rewards, like, it's just like if you are landing in the same spot like generally every game, or like going for the Kaiju Volt every game or something, it's like, I have to sit down and do this lock picking game, and it's like the same every time. And then I get, you know, sometimes it's cool to see different powers every time, but it feels pretty repetitive to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
It reminds me of like a laning phase in like a MOBA, but without interacting with like anyone else. So it's like you're kind of doing the same thing all the time, and it's never changing. That was something also, I kind of noticed lately.
Also, I just suck at the lock picking thing, so
you do. That's okay though.
I always say, gotta pay the Supervive tax. Do your PvP. Do your PvE to do your PvP.
Did y'all ever play the Freak Week version of Vaults where you had to typing at the dead to open? To open the vault. That was, anyways.
No.
anyways, that sounds crazy.
Maybe we're leaking too much.
that's a reverse. That's like a reverse. That's like a reverse leak.
Reverse leak.
Oh, that was one of the, first things I did.
Oh, that's awesome. Anyways. That's awesome. Well, again, thank you guys for coming out. This has been an exciting episode, amazing episode. I had a blast. Great answers to all the questions. Thank you everybody in the Reddit, Twitter, Discord, everywhere in chat for all the questions. We greatly appreciate you so much. We'll probably have the next Kaiju Power Hour out before the next playtest, whenever that may be. So make sure you follow us
on
Twitter. Keep
an eye out for the announcement for the playtest and our show.
So, thank you again for coming on. Thank you everybody for coming out. It's been amazing.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. Peace out. Goodbye, everybody.
This is a blast. Hell yeah.
Thank you all later.